If you went to summer camp as a kid, perhaps you slept out under the night sky. The Milky Way spread out like a bright blanket and threaded now and then with shooting stars. Stargazing is one of the simple pleasures of life, but it's also profoundly shaped who we are as human beings. Science, religion, and origin stories from diverse traditions have all been deeply connected to the human tendency to gaze up at the night sky. Roberto Trotta is a cosmologist at the International School for Advanced Studies in Trieste, Italy, and he's often wondered what our species might have been like if we had never been able to see the stars. Some planets, like Venus, are eternally shrouded in clouds, so even if intelligent beings had evolved to survive its extreme climate, they would never see the universe beyond. And if our view of the heavens was obscured, Roberto Trotta says it's possible advanced civilizations capable of traveling out into space would have never developed. His book is called Starborn: How the Stars Made Us and Who We Would Be Without Them. And Professor Trotta joins us now. Welcome back to Living on Earth.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be back.
So I think we really take for granted the stars that we see at night if we're, you know, lucky enough to have dark enough skies to see those stars. And as you write, astronomy was the midwife to all the sciences. Why is that?
Because astronomy was the first of what would then become sciences to actually have access to a plethora of quantitative data. That was, of course, in the 16th century when astronomers started working out our place in the universe, started working out that the Earth was not at the center of the solar system, but actually the Sun was, which was, you know, the Copernican Revolution was an absolute paradigm shift of our conception of the universe we live in. But even before then, of course, for millennia, the stars have drawn the attention of humanity, starting from history, as I argue in the book, but also in historical times. We had all these priests and these high sacred people who would look up at the sky, try to divine the future, try to understand what the position and the movement of the planets and the stars would mean for humanity, for the king, for example, for the empire and so on. The practice of astrology, which is very much disparaged today, was very, very important in our past because it is through astrology that for thousands of years, humankind kept up their interest for the stars. And we often forget that when the 16th century came around and the scientific revolution came around, many of the central characters of the scientific revolution, Copernicus, Galileo, Tycho Brahe, Kepler, they were all astrologers as well as astronomers because the kings and other high placed people who paid their salaries just as much for their observations as for their divination. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, astrology was really important and that led to astronomy. And astronomy at that point had this very long tradition of data observation, interest for the sky, out of which quantitative science and physics sprang. Without astronomy, Newton wouldn't have written down the laws of gravitation, and physics would not exist as we know it. And without physics, none of the other sciences.
Hmm. It's so interesting to hear you talk about how something that was so unscientific, you know, especially considering it today, what we know, astrology actually did end up leading to careful observation and science itself.
Exactly. And all these patrons who really helped astrology along, unwittingly, they also ushered in the scientific revolution eventually.
Hmm. How has our knowledge of time been shaped by the planets and cosmos?
Time is intimately related to the cycles in the sky, let alone the day-night alternation that we mentioned. That's, of course, the most basic unit of time. But to go beyond that, to go beyond the simple observing that there is a period of light and a period of darkness that repeats every 24 hours, really the moon was central. The phases of the moon and the lunar cycle of 29.5 days was absolutely crucial in enabling the understanding that we can measure time spans that are longer than a day. And therefore, that was one of the central planks, not just from a point of view, for example, of the hunt. We can imagine prehistoric hunters-gatherers trying to time their hunts with the full moon, because that's something that we have largely forgotten. We never paying attention to this. But if you are a hunter-gatherer in a place, in a world that's entirely dark, except for the cosmic luminaries above us, then you absolutely know that when the sun sets on a full moon night, that's when the moon rises. And that means that if you're still hunting prey out at dusk, out at sunset, the moon will follow up and illuminate the hunt and will stay on for the whole night if needs be, and you can hunt down that prey that has perhaps escaped you. So probably the full moon was enabling not just the most fruitful hunts in prehistory, but also was giving rise to rituals, perhaps fertility rituals, to celebrate that successful hunt. So timekeeping, as marked by the period of the moon, was absolutely central. And of course, even today, when we glance at the 12 subdivisions of a normal clock, we are, without realizing it, we are looking at a series of stars that the Egyptians called the decans that followed Sirius about 10 degrees apart in the sky, which is the reason why we subdivide the night and then the day also in 12 hours. And so whenever we glance at our watch, in reality, we're glancing deep into the past and deep into the starry origin of our timekeeping that has always been with us.
So we have to talk about Galileo Galilei, very important astronomer. How did Galileo's observation of the stars through his telescope shape astronomy?
Galileo in 1610 did something absolutely extraordinary, the significance of which slightly escapes us today because we're so used to it now. But when he heard that something that we now call a telescope had been invented in the Netherlands, he immediately set his genius in motion to try to build his own. And in fact, after 24 hours, he had built his own telescope with no instructions, no blueprint, nothing, grinding the lens himself, and so on. And when he had this telescope fashioned for himself, he did a revolutionary thing. He took it and he pointed it to the sky. And it's a simple act of almost incredible daring, the fact that he wanted to see what marvels were hidden in the sky by the means of a device that could now give him a more powerful acuity and vision. And when he did that, all sorts of incredible sights opened up to his understanding and his ability to draw them, actually. And he saw the moons of Jupiter. He discovered the fact that there were other moons revolving around another planet. He saw the phases of Venus, the fact that Venus changes its shape, just like the moon does, which is incontrovertible evidence for the fact that Venus actually orbits the sun and not the Earth. He studied the sun's sunspots, which had been already discovered, but he was the first to characterize them. He looked at the moon and he realized it's got craters and valleys and crevices, and it's not that perfect object that Aristotle had said. And so the sky and the Earth were made of the same substance. And that was shattering in terms of changing our view of what the cosmos was made of. So all of this together, really, you know, any of these discoveries and all of them together completely changed our view, not only of the universe around us, but also of our place in the universe and our relationship with it.
What a revolution. So Roberto, your book takes us all the way from ancient history through our relationship with the stars today. And I was fascinated and frankly quite alarmed to read in your book that our view of the stars is threatened today, not only by light pollution, of course, which I think a lot of us experience, anyone who lives near a city, but also by artificial satellites. What's the impact of having thousands of satellites orbiting Earth?
True. In my view, this is a dramatic ecological crisis that's unfolding silently and above our heads, without people really realizing it and without much fuss about it. But it's as concerning as other ecological crises that, unfortunately, we're witnessing in our time. And it's brought about by the fact that in the last few years, private companies, private space companies, have launched thousands of internet satellites in low Earth orbit. That's 250 kilometers up. So they're relatively nearby. And space is fast becoming congested. So there's now about 10,000 satellites in near orbit. And according to some estimates, by 2030, there's going to be 100,000 satellites. And those satellites are mostly used for the purpose of providing internet service, fast internet service everywhere at all times. But the downside, well, there's many downsides, but a very concerning one is that being so low, they actually reflect the sun's light, especially at dusk through the solar panels, and also depending on the location and the season throughout the night. And they show up as little moving dots across the firmament, which means that if you look up on a dark night, if you're lucky enough to live under dark skies, which is increasingly difficult, of course, because of light pollution, which means that you will see plenty of these little dots carving little lines across the sky. And by some estimates, unfortunately, I'm sad to report that by 2030, it's possible that we will see more artificial satellites in the sky than real stars. At which point, we will have lost the sky for good. We will never, nowhere on Earth, have the opportunity to actually experience the sky like our ancestors always have done. And so we lost forever that connection with the beauty and inspiration of the eternal sublime, as Emerson put it. And that's happening, you know, at launch after launch, it's happening fast. And if it's not regulated or stopped soon, it will be too late to get it back.
And that's nothing that going to a dark sky sanctuary can resolve. I mean, if they're up there, you're going to see them.
Exactly. And that's dramatic, right? Because it's already difficult enough to find the dark sky sanctuary those days. But those satellites will be everywhere. They are running around all the globe. And so you won't be able to escape them. There is no mountain that's tall enough. There is no ocean that's offshore far enough for you to escape them because they're everywhere all the time. Mm. So that's a real loss. It's a tragic loss of perhaps what I think of as the last global common and actually the only truly global common that humanity has shared, you know, across cultures, across times, since time immemorial. The sky has been, you know, everybody's, but space no longer is.
It does seem like we'd have an impoverished experience of the sky at night. And what's the impact to science, if any?
Yes, there is a cultural impact, which I just described, but also there is a scientific impact because as those satellites pass in front of astronomers' telescopes, both on Earth and in space, they leave trails on the pictures that astronomers take of the deep sky. And that means that up to 50%, up to half of the data of the great astronomical observatories are rendered unusable for research. So this has got a real cost in terms of essentially nullifying half of the billion-dollar efforts that astronomers are putting into studying the sky and making important programs more difficult. For example, asteroid tracking becomes more difficult because of these tracks left by the satellites. And that's a really important program, for example, in order to raise alarm in case asteroids are deflected off course or would be threatening to life on Earth. All the satellites render this so much harder, and it's a real scientific problem.
How do you think studying the stars and looking up the sky can inspire us to take better care of our planet?
I think it does. And I think it does because it affords us the opportunity for once to see ourselves from a different cosmic perspective. Let me just backtrack for a second and talk for a minute about what is called the overview effect, which is this mystical, if you want to call it that, experience that many astronauts report when they get to see our fragile, beautiful blue and white planet from space, right? When they behold this little globe floating in the darkness of space, in the velvet of the universe, and they realize that we're so fragile, we're so little, and all the squabbles, all the wars, all the terrible things that are happening to our planet really should not be happening because we need to see ourselves as being global citizens of one spaceship Earth, which is our own and only protection against the hostility of space. And so that's the overview effect. And many astronauts have reported feeling something move inside their heart or inside their soul when they perceive Earth from that. And that's not available to everybody, of course, but we Earthbound being, if we look up, we won't see ourselves from up there, but we can still see what's out there and transport ourselves into this cosmic perspective and understand in looking at the void between the glowing stars and looking at the majesty of the night sky and realizing the smallness and the fragility of our life compared to that. I think that's a very important and very needed antidote to the hubris, the technologically driven hubris that's wreaking havoc to our planet. You know, think about loss of biodiversity, climate change, the terrible wars that we're witnessing every day. All of this needs to be put in a different perspective, the perspective of the stars. And if we start measuring our actions and the impact of our actions on the cosmic perspective, I think that the politics and the economics and the kind of societies that we want to build on our planet would change radically. It could inspire us to build a better world.
It is really special, this perspective that we're given by being able to look up at the stars, send up instruments and people up there to look back at Earth.
Absolutely. And it's something that's been only afforded to us by the technology that was actually born out of the science that was ultimately given to us by the contemplation of the stars. So in a way, our understanding of the stars is something that we owe the stars themselves.
So Roberto, the stars have been hugely important for humans, for how our societies have developed. How important have they been in your life?
Well, I realized that stars really shaped my life profoundly. And perhaps that's not so surprising for somebody who is a cosmologist by profession, and therefore my very profession wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for the stars. But perhaps I hadn't realized fully how the stars had really changed the course of my personal history as much as my professional history. And that's also how I chose to actually open the book, and where I tell a story that I think prior to actually writing it in the book, I probably never told anybody. It's a story of how many, many years ago, on a dark night in my native Switzerland, which is a landlocked country, which at that time still enjoyed some quite dark skies, I had a date, and my date and I were out for an evening at a theater, and then we were walking back home, and then we both happened to look up at the sky at a very special moment where something really special and quite magical happened. It was a meteor passing by, a shooting star, if you like, which appeared to be the perfect romantic moment that sparked, well, something that was in the air but hadn't quite catalyzed yet. And many years later, when I actually came to reflect about my personal trajectory and history, I found myself looking into my wife's eyes, and I saw the very same falling star reflected in there still, because that date, that night, later on, 25 years plus later, that girl had become my wife. And I don't know whether that would have been quite the same story if that shooting star had not happened to fall precisely that night, at that moment, in that circumstance that really somehow brought some magic to the entire thing, and definitely changed the course of my life.
Roberto Trotta is a cosmologist and astrophysicist and author of the book Starborn: How the Stars Made Us and Who We Would Be Without Them. Thank you for joining us.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.